You're going to love my next guest. His name is Ariel Freeman. He is a longtime law enforcement professional, and he's also a hit musician going by the name One Time Music. Now, One Time Music creates rap and hip-hop for law enforcement, military, and patriots alike. His rap song, Doing My Job and Never Know, are some of his biggest hits to date. You are going to love them. In this interview, we talk about the state of policing, the way forward, race relations in the United States, and of course, his amazing music. Do not miss this interview with the one and only One Time Music on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the CJ Evolution podcast. Thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. That's why we continue to grow. Thank you so much. Keep sharing it with your family and friends, and take a moment, give us that five-star rating on iTunes. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you are doing, maybe you're a deputy, maybe you're a law enforcement officer working the street, maybe you're working in corrections, whatever you are doing, thank you for doing it, especially in these uncertain times. Remember, you are cherished, honored, and above all, you are loved. You have much support. Folks, if you love coffee, you know I'm a huge fan of Four Sigmatic. I love this coffee. I love the Lion's Mane mushroom coffee. Yes, I said mushrooms. Doesn't taste like mushrooms. It tastes better than regular coffee, and it's better for you. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to this amazing company. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Now, folks, I love being connected with organizations and companies that are out there trying to help and keep our first responders and military safe. It is an honor to be partnered with Detectachem. If you don't know who this company is, you got to check them out because they are helping keep our troops safer, offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs and explosives. You have to have this technology for your organization. If you head over to the website, cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Detectachem. See how they can help keep your troops safer. I remember for many years, I suffered from digestive issues, especially when you're working in the criminal justice field. You're not eating right a lot. You get what I'm talking about. Now, if you're one of the millions who suffer from digestive issues like gas, bloating, cramping, even when you're eating healthy, nutritious foods, then you could probably benefit from a high-quality enzyme. If you've never tried enzymes, or even if you've tried and they haven't worked, I want you to give this one a chance. As you know, I'm a mega fan of the company Bioptimizers. They are one of the few supplement companies who have the best formulations and use the highest quality ingredients, and their products work. I asked them if we could organize a great deal for all my listeners, and they over-delivered. Right now, you can get a bottle of Mass Zymes for free. All you need to do is pay a small shipping fee, and there's no catch. There's no tricks forcing you to continue, nothing to cancel. They are so confident in their products that they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee, so I'm positive you'll be satisfied with the results. Mass Zymes is a 17-enzyme full-spectrum formula with 5 different kinds of protease. Plus, it contains all the key enzymes needed for optimal digestion. Mass Zymes ensures that all the protein you consume breaks down into absorbable amino acids. So many individuals suffer from digestive issues because any protein your body doesn't break down creates digestive distress, gas, bloating, and constipation. Mass Zymes ensures that all the protein you consume breaks down into an absorbable amino acid. So I strongly suggest that you head over to their site to grab your bottle before they either run out or take down this offer. Go to www.masszymes.com/free. That's masszymes.com/free, F-R-E-E, all one word. You will automatically get access to your unique coupon code to claim your free bottle. Limit 1 per household. Offer is valid while supplies last. You're going to love their products. Go to www.masszymes.com/free. You will not be disappointed. On to the show with the one and only One Time Music. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Ariel Freeman. He's a law enforcement officer who actually works. He'll let him explain it to you. But he's got just a shit ton of experience in law enforcement. He's also an amazing musician. He's going to talk about it. Ariel, are you there, brother?
Yes, sir. How you doing, man?
Oh, man. We just had a great... I am doing fantastic, brother. Thank you for being on the show. And we just had a great conversation about your background.
Yes, sir.
And for those of people that don't know who you are, we're going to get into your amazing music, like I said. We're going to get into some other topics that are kind of in the news.
Yeah,
and then,
definitely.
But tell the listener about yourself, brother. I know you just explained it to me, but if you wouldn't mind, just kind of tell the listener about you and the wonderful work you're doing.
Yes, sir. I am Ariel Freeman. Some people know me as One Time, and that's my music alias. But I started policing when I was 21 years old. Realistically, it was one of my first jobs, and absolutely loved it. I started in Orangeburg Department of Public Safety. Now, I'm from Georgia. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, but I ended up in South Carolina through football. I was a super prep blue chip All-American coming out of high school and ended up selecting University of South Carolina to go to college. And, you know, fortunate, it was a great experience. Unfortunately, you know, me and the coaches just didn't get along. Mm-hmm. So I ended up in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and we played at South Carolina State University. And then again, politics and football, it's probably just as bad as American politics. So I said, you know what, man, I gotta go get a job. I need to go put meat on the table. And I end up in Orangeburg. If you're familiar with Orangeburg, South Carolina, it sits between Columbia and Charleston, and it's pretty much the middle of nowhere. It's about country as you can get. Hunting season is a holiday around there. Literally, people don't go to work. And but I still love it, but I end up, it was a very small selection of careers you can pick from. So it was either work at a plant, it was work at the local hospital. Now I dropped out, so I didn't have those skills. Or the degree or the background to do that, or it was work in a law enforcement agency, which it was either Orangeburg Department of Public Safety in the city, or the county, the Orangeburg Sheriff Department, or the State Patrol. So I opted for Orangeburg Public Safety. I ended up getting on and going to the police academy at South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy. Shortly thereafter, after my graduation from the Criminal Justice Academy, I attended the Fire Academy because we were dual-hatted. Yeah, I worked close to 3 years at Orangeburg Public Safety, and then finally my ambitions were to get to the State Patrol. And I got there, and we used to see them lined up, you know, at Basic Academy, see the troopers come in, marching and looking sharp, and I said, I want to do that, and eventually got to it. My career there was great. It was fun. I had a lot of opportunities, because I came in with some experience, you know, went through like A school, which was our drug and addiction school, aggressive criminal enforcement school. And I also worked the detail for the South Carolina State Criminal Justice, South Carolina football team. I'm sorry. The South Carolina, State University's football team. I was the, responsible for getting them to and from games and standing on the sideline with the coach. So it was a cool experience as well. But that my tenure at the State Patrol was really stressful. And I know the LEOs that are listening, the ones that go to Police Week, you know, when you lose somebody on duty,
sure,
your partners, your peers, guys you sit down with at lunch and say, meet up at the whatever your spot is and y'all hang out and you talk about your families and stuff. Well, one of my buddies, excuse me if I get a little, you know.
Yeah.
So when I was trying to get on the highway patrol, it wasn't easy, right? And my boy James Haynes, he would meet with me and we would, I said, look, I need to try to get on. And he would mentor. He acted as a mentor for me. And, he took me to take a talk to the captain of the post, and he gave me some pointers and kind of told me what to do. And I ended up getting on because of him, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I mean? And he ended up dying in a car crash. And it was a real rough time. Sorry to hear that, brother. Yeah. And, you know, at that point, I hadn't experienced anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, starting as a rookie cop at 21, you know, when I first seen my first homicide, I cried. Like, it was like, you know, I had to go to the car, you know, because, you know, you want to be a macho man. But, you know, you're just not used to seeing.
It's a tough scene, yeah.
Yeah, the worst of people. You get what I'm saying? And. But that was my first time losing somebody in uniform, one of my brothers, somebody that was close. And, you know, really a couple of months later, we had another, you know, one of the guys, he was a deputy in the county. He ended up getting shot in the neck, responding to a just a welfare check. And he was greeted at the door with a shotgun. Jeez. And I never forget the night I was on the traffic stop, and I had these guys pulled over, and it was only to show you, we had the largest coverage area in the state of South Carolina, right? The troopers. It was only two of us working that night. And I was working up on the northern end of the county, and one of the other troopers was working on the lower end. And it was only two deputies working. Mm-hmm. And we talking about a large coverage area. And the call came out on the county's radio. It didn't come over the radio. He didn't call in for help or anything. He actually called dispatch, and we booked it to the scene. And he was on the A-cert team, and I was on our cert team. So we set up a road check, and we started sweeping the area to look for the subject. But just seeing him laying there in a pool of blood, man, with a phone by him, it was just rough. And then so we didn't have overtime, right? So we stayed out, man, a good while. We ended up catching the subject. He was he rolled off into a ditch. Not to bore you with the details. He jumped after he shot a deputy. He jumped in the hood of the girl car, and she pretty much ran him over, and he rolled into a ditch. Not too far away from the house, but we didn't have overtime. So, you know, the sergeant said, just look, how many hours you worked over, just come back in that late, that many hours later the next day. Well, I wasn't even on probably an hour. And I hear, you know, 1033, you know, which is the emergency call.
Traffic.
Yep. And it's our new, brand new corporal just gets to the county. And it's like his first traffic stop. He gets shot 5 times. And we talking about this is less than 24 hours.
Jesus. What year was this, brother?
This is 2008. Okay. Orangeburg, South Carolina. Yeah. And yeah, man, it was rough. And at the time I had just had my third child, and it was just like, ooh, I had to do some reevaluating. Mm-hmm. So after about 2 years at the patrol, and that's part of it, because we can get into pay, and everybody knows police officers, they talk about defunding the police. So, I mean, I got some words for you, brother. We already defunded.
Exactly.
So I end up switching to the dark side, the contract world. During that time period, a lot of guys, man, were going over working for DynaCorp.
Oh, yeah, making a ton of money.
Making a ton of money. And I ended up going working for Wackenhut and at Department of Justice headquarters. And I was fortunate enough to be able to, and they had their stuff squared away, man. Ended up being a team lead on the SWAT team and working at the Liberty Square building, coordinating with the U.S. Secret Service when Obama's transition team was at the Liberty Square building. I was able to run those ops and help put together plans from the contract side. Now, we already know that the Secret Service owns, you know, that protection, but that small supplemental stuff we were responsible for, and I was able to lead up a team to do that. And that opened up an opportunity for me to work over and be a project manager at the Executive Office of the President, where I led a contract at the United States Trade Representatives, the drug czar, in the White House Conference Center. But I wanted to get back into the government side of the house, because if you know anything about contracts, that's a short life lived.
Yeah.
We had just read up the contract, but I just didn't want to depend on, you know, if the president liked me or the vice president.
Yeah, they can come and go.
So I ended up, I put in for, it was either DC Police, Pentagon, my current agency, and I would just say I work in the intelligence community. And I got selected, decided to take the IC route. I worked as, you know, they did, federal policing looks way different than, you know, being a road dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of people know that. It's pros and cons, ups and downs. Deal with some of the same stuff, but you're just not doing all the calls and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate enough to be able to get on our K-9 unit. It was newly started, and I worked on our K-9 unit. We go to ATF. We had ATF K-9s, and we went to ATF Academy, graduated, and I worked the explosive K-9 for about 6.5-7 years before I got in that time period, I got promoted to sergeant. And within that, something, it was in our special operations division. And then I got an opportunity to get promoted to day tour commander. So once I got promoted to a lieutenant position, I went to Northwestern University, class 414.
I know. Class 441, like we were talking about it, bro.
So I graduated class 414, Northwestern University, School of Police Staff Command graduate. And then I got, I was at a crossroads at that point, because where I work, in order to get promoted, to in order for me to get my GS-15, I would have to switch my, get more breadth and depth, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I need to have a little exposure and experience in other areas to broaden out my resume. So I opted to go into our Insider Threat Program, which we essentially protecting classified information and trying to, you know, catch spies, basically. So it's kind of, you know, and right now working in an investigative role, and we work a lot with other IC partners throughout the country and the FBI quite a bit. Well, and that's kind of where I am right now in my career.
That's just, is that all? Ariel? I mean, is that it? I mean, shit, man.
Well,
you've done a little bit. And I want to talk about the music, but you just done a little bit, you know,
just a little bit, man.
Just a little smidgen. Now you, I mean, I follow you on social media. There's all kinds of, I mean, I don't even know where to start with this era, but I'm going to ask you where do you think we're going in this country? All the stuff you mentioned, defunding the police, man, I don't know how we've got to this point in history. I mean, what is your take
how frank can I be on this show?
Be as frank as you want, brother.
My opinion, and that's the big caveat. My opinion is, I think we've become too liberal as a country. There's a couple of things. Liberalism, we're just too liberal, right? There is too. We accept everything now. Mm-hmm. Right? It's really no standard, right? You know, kind of before we had some standards. It's things that as a nation we didn't rock with. You know, it was Guile's morals, it was principles that families held close and near and dear. And I think we just got away from some of those foundational things. Now, one can argue on the other side that we had a lot of other stuff going on, i.e. civil rights and all that, but let's take away that for a minute and just look at family structure, togetherness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family was the family. It was a nucleus, right? Family meant something. Values meant something. Discipline meant something. None of those things mean anything no more. And we have a lot of children, teenagers, young adults who are authority adverse, and so are their parents, and nobody's telling the kids that they're wrong. So and so that's my broader picture when I speak on liberalism, in our country, and I think we need to have a little bit more conservative. For me, I would say a lot of conservatism, but mm-hmm. even just a smidget more of yeah. less acceptance, right? This being politically correct and all. No, we need to call it what it is sometimes. Yeah. And we're soft. We don't have a common enemy anymore, right? You know, if you think about American history, we had identified enemies outside of the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. With communism, you know, we were fighting the red states, mean red nation. You know, we knew we had somebody to look at. Mm-hmm. 9/11, we had somebody to look at. Right now, since we don't have an identified common enemy, we're fighting each other.
Yeah.
Which is sad. It's sad. That's sad. But I think we forgot what it is to be American.
Yeah. And I think most, 99% of us looked at what happened to George Floyd and were like, holy shit. I mean, that is horrible. I know that's an understatement. But it seems like after that horrible murder, I'm going to call it, because I think it was, everything got lost, man. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like his death got lost in all this other shit. Now they're, you know, they got a country called CHOP in Seattle. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
it's just everything got lost. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the wrong characterization of it.
No.
Now we're tearing down statues and all this other stuff. And I think that doesn't help that doesn't help anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we don't have any leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will speak from an African American's perspective that nobody on that side is stepping up. Is nobody saying, now one argument I bring to the table is, look, I get what happened to George Floyd, what happened mm-hmm. It's a lot of questionable use of force matters that we can bring up that we can say, well, we'll say George Floyd, right? Because that's a unanimous look. But we still must do a after action report within the community to say, what can we do to minimize these interactions with law enforcement, right? And I think what we're too busy doing now is trying to find a way to play the victim with everything that's going on. So it's like this extended victim mentality. Like, you know, every time the police pull me over now, I'm going to be, you know, well, I know my rights. You know, I'm not giving you nothing, right? I'm like, I'm just doing my job, you know? And nobody's looking at that, though. Nobody's mm-hmm. looking at circling back saying, what do we need to do to correct ourselves? Most of the, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, they're looking for a handout from the government as if the government can snap their fingers and make everything right, like mm-hmm. changing the leader of the nation. Because the last time I checked, you know, Trump administration, Obama, Bush, this stuff been going on for years.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. You know, right? It's one man doesn't dictate what goes on. And I think they've taken this as an opportunity, the George Floyd incident, to politicize this election, mm-hmm. sadly. And I think, you know, if this happens in a non-election cycle, we may not see what we're seeing now. But I think the powers that be are politicizing this to the max to be able to use it as leverage for November.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then I think it makes the obvious question is, you know, what happens if Trump gets reelected? I don't know who would vote for Biden. I mean, I guess there are people who are, but
I don't know,
it's going to be, anarchy in the streets, brother. I mean, I don't know.
It already is.
Man. Yeah, it already is.
My question is, how much worse can it get? Or do you have somebody comes with this a premonition that, hey, well, maybe it's not him, right? Maybe it's something else, right? Maybe it's not the politicians, right?
Yeah.
I do think we should have reform within law enforcement.
Oh, I agree with that. I've been saying that for a long time, but I don't think that the the actions of a few are indicative of the whole.
No.
You know, the
but nobody gets that.
Yeah, I mean, you know that there's bad cops out there, Ariel. I know because I've been doing it a long time. You've been doing it a long time. There are bad cops out there that shouldn't be wearing a badge and shouldn't be in a uniform.
Right.
But the overwhelming majority of officers out there, in my opinion, are just doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment.
Yeah. But nobody cares. Yeah. CJ, nobody cares about that. Nobody ever takes the opportunity to say, hey, well, he might have a family. He may, you know, every time nowadays a law enforcement officer interacts with the public, that officer has the question whether it's going to be blown out of proportion or are they going to antagonize the officer? And then next thing you know, he's stuck in a use of force situation, a legitimate use of force situation, mm-hmm. that the last 30-second clip gets clipped, you know, put on social media, and he's being ridiculed and now possibly fired. I mean, look at Atlanta, look at the Atlanta situation. Yeah.
Jump to conclusion. Jump to a verdict right away, which I couldn't believe. And I, you know, the district attorney down there, you know, I think, you know, you remember this, Ariel. I mean, I think a week prior he fired, or the Atlanta fired cops for using a taser because they thought they said it was a deadly weapon.
Yeah. Well, that's the Atlanta situation I'm referring to.
So okay. Yeah. That's okay.
Anybody take that out of context.
Yeah.
I'm
referring
to the six officers that, in my opinion, you know, were, if you've seen the whole video, in my opinion,
they were
justified in everything that they did, and, you know, and they get fired. You know, you turn back around a couple of weeks later, pretty much the reverse thing happened, right? These officers were justified, in my opinion, within the Wendy's incident and using deadly force, and now you're going to charge them. So I just don't see.
Well,
it's very politicized. Law enforcement is very politicized, right?
Yeah, it's. I think it's very political. I think the DA down there is under some scrutiny with some things he's been doing. So I think it's very political. He wants to keep his job, but it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out with the officer. And look, I don't think anybody's discounting the fact that somebody died, which is horrible. But I think. You know, no cop, I always tell people this, Ariel, no cop, I shouldn't say no, maybe there are a few, gets their uniform on every day and say, I'm going to go kill somebody.
Right.
I mean, it's just my opinion. I don't think most cops don't do that. 99.9% of them do. Maybe there are a few that do. I mean, we need to get the hell get them out of our ranks. But nobody does that. So I'm going to go out and shoot somebody, put everything on the line, my wife, my family, my house, everything. To shoot somebody.
To go shoot somebody.
You got to shoot somebody. I just don't believe it. And so let me ask you this, brother. I mean, so if somebody, and maybe you've gotten this question before. So if somebody came up to you and said, you know, Mr. Freeman, you've been in law enforcement for a long time. I want to get into law enforcement. What would you tell them right now?
I mean, wow, this question would have been so easy to answer last year, right? Like,
in December.
Yeah, in December. This would have been so easy. I'm going to be honest, man. Like, I would say, look, if you have the qualifications to go attempt to go federal, try. Yeah. Work in the streets at the, you know, specifically at the local level is a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit more difficult, but you can't live in fear. I would say, you know, just do it and be careful.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're going, when you go through the fire sometimes, you learn a lot. So let me say, this isn't a terrible time to be in law enforcement either, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I say it's about a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
But you can learn something by being in law enforcement right now, more so than any other generation.
Or you could be a change maker. You could be the person who changes.
There you go. There you go. So this, I like to look at problems. I like to solve problems. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a bad time to be in law enforcement, but everybody doesn't think like me. So, but if so, you know, to answer your question, if somebody asks me about it, I love, you know, I love the blue money. So I'm not going to steer them away from it, especially if they're a good person. Go into it, be careful, you know, try to find a way to change the culture from within the organization and do your best. I mean, this is nothing. You and I both been doing this for a while, man. When I first got on, it was like, look, man, don't flag, don't put no stickers on your car that said police, and be very cautious. Cause we had one Walmart in Orangeburg, man. One. So it was like highly likely that I would have locked up somebody and seen them at that Walmart. And I locked up a lot of people. And I was taught to, stay kind of incognito, low profile. Always carry your gun on you, protect yourself, protect your family, but stay incognito. So in newer generations, they, it's like flags everywhere. And I looked at it like, these guys are out to kill you. Okay, let me tell you, there's some guys out here that don't like us. Did you not get the memo? Because I got that memo when I got on. And so I always live by that, right? Very low profile. Not saying I wasn't proud of my job.
No, I was the same way, brother. I mean you have to be. Especially when you have a family, it's one thing if it's just you, which is still dangerous, but when you got, you got stuff all over your car, and I'm like you, I bleed blue and I want to put that stuff on there, but it's like, holy shit, if I do, what happens if somebody targets my family? What happens if somebody follows my wife? What happens if somebody follows my kids? So
yeah, people out there like that. So nowadays, law enforcement, hold on. Nowadays, America is different, right? So that's America, the culture, the social media, which is a gift and a curse. Everything's different about the world we're living in, but so is law enforcement. Right. And I think what law enforcement has to do is get back to some of those principles that you and I learned when we first got on.
Sure.
To start going back to, because it's a legit, we don't get a wartime, right? It's no peacetime for us, right? It's every day is wartime for us. I don't care if you answer in one call, not, you just don't know if that second call you get is going to be your last. That's a fact. And I think we have to get back into that mentality, right? Because I think we've got to the point where we've been too open about what we're doing and who we are, and you're putting your life, your family's life at risk every time you do it.
Yeah, well said. And I don't think law enforcement, I don't care what people say about, Minneapolis is going to be interesting, man, because they want to just abolish the police. And that's going to be an experiment that we can all just sit back and watch, because I don't think law enforcement's ever going to go away. We might defund, we might shift resources here and there, and we might do this, but we're not getting rid of law enforcement. I mean, who the hell are you going to call?
Right.
I mean, when something goes south, oh, my kid ran away. Okay, I guess we'll have a social worker come and talk to you. Hey, somebody's breaking in my house. Oh, don't worry. One of your neighbors is going to come and help you. I mean, it's unbelievable, the mindset out there with some people.
Yeah, but that's the anarchists that just want to get away with stuff. It's the criminal element that's pushing that, because they like, we can peddle our drugs with impunity. We can do what we want.
Yeah.
And it's happening in states, real left states, man.
Yeah.
Which is, not to politicize it, but you just call it what it is. And it's that, again, it's the ultimate liberalism that's really our demise.
Yeah.
As Trump says, law and order. We need it.
Yeah.
That's why we have a constitution.
Agreed, brother. Let's shift a little bit. I want to talk about your music, man, which is amazing. Now, tell me, I remember when I first connected with you, I think it was on Instagram, and I started listening. You sent me some stuff, and I started listening to your music. I love the Doing My Job single. And love that song. And so how did you get into music? Because you are talented. For everybody listening to this, Ariel's, One Time Music, at One Time Music, is going to be linked up in the show notes. You got to check them out. How did you get into, let's talk about something more funner. Let's talk about your music, brother. Because that is, I imagine that's a release for you. And but how did you get into it, man?
So, you know, growing up in Atlanta, I grew up in a hotbed of artists. And I grew up in a suburban town right out, like on the southwest side of Atlanta. It was called East Point. And East Point, where I grew up at, I've seen all kinds of celebrities. CeeLo Green, he stayed in my apartments. I remember seeing Outkast.
I remember Outkast.
Yeah, I remember seeing Outkast come pick CeeLo up in the apartments, man. TLC, T-Buzz.
Oh, TLC,
Yep, T-Buzz, her cousin, stayed in my apartment. So we used to chase T-Buzz. I felt like she had it timed. Like she knew the kids were getting off the school bus. And she would pull in, and we'd just run behind her, chasing her.
That's all. Now, one of them passed away, right, from TLC? Sorry to digress. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. And then, like, my grandmother's church, Monica, the singer of Monica, she was, you know, her stepdad was a preacher and a mom, you know, they were members at the church. So I grew up around a lot of talented, I grew up around music, like, directly and indirectly. My high school, Tri-Cities High School in East Point, produced a lot of people. So, but that doesn't qualify me as a artist. But I grew up, I started doing music and I started like rapping in like fourth grade. Like it was like my teacher, she would, we had to do an anti-drug rap. And she like helped us do an anti-drug rap. So it was like one of my first raps, anti-drugs, say no to drugs. And then I did one about Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. And she was really into the music and really helped me out. And I developed over time. So one of the big producers in Atlanta is Midnight Black. I know the rapper Young Jeezy has worked with him and some of the other big Atlanta artists. You know, I used to go to the studio with him and I was in a little group in Atlanta. And so as I grew up to adulthood, I was like, yeah, I want to continue to express myself. Once I got into law enforcement, I was like, you know, I'm not doing like the gangster rap stuff doesn't fit what I'm doing. Right. I don't do all that. Like I like people up for a living.
And might be something different right there. Might be a contradiction. Yeah,
But it was more so I would ride around on duty, man, and I would lose my mind because, you know, T-Pain had just like came out and I would hear T-Pain like 20 times at night. Lil Wayne, I'm like, man,
Ludacris.
Ludacris, like, back me up. Ludacris, I'm like, yo, man, what's your fantasy? I was like, man, yeah, if I could just find one more time, bro. But it was before the AM track. The AM FM transmitters had just came out because we didn't have any CD players or auxiliary ports in the car. But none of the music really represented what I was doing.
Sure.
Right. And I'm like old school kind of in a sense mentality where I'm like, well, you can't rap about it unless you're doing it. Right.
Yeah.
So I say, you know what? This is the first time anybody will hear this and what I'm about to tell you. I'm just doing my job. That I put on this, on my Never Know EP I just released, was the very first police song ever written.
Wow.
What's the guy now? I think it's one of the guys, real popular online. He actually sent it back to me because he had been following me since I was on MySpace. Because I put out, shortly after that, I put I'm the Police out, that song, like 2005 on MySpace. And, you know, I said, you know what, people haven't heard I'm Just Doing My Job. So I re-recorded it. And again, that was like 2005, 2006. So it just tells you how relevant the lyrics are still are in law enforcement nowadays. But I was a MySpacer, so I'll put stuff on MySpace, but nobody was really feeling like love police music. And at the time I couldn't afford studio time. So once I switched over to the dark side, because the dark side pays a lot more money than so once I switched over, and I could actually go to a studio that I wasn't worried about getting, you know, assaulted, you know, for rapping when I was rapping.
Sure.
Able to afford to go to a nicer studio. So that was when I recorded Respect the Shield.
Yeah.
And I released that in 2009. And that was, you know, like, you know, we can fact check it. As far as I know, is that's the first 100% dedicated law enforcement album ever recorded.
Yeah.
Respect the Shield. And from there, I went on a hiatus, man. Like, I released in 2009. And, you know, I would be lying if I didn't want instant gratification, brother.
Sure.
Because I felt like at the time, like, every law enforcement officer in America should be listening to this. And so I took a pause, a big pause. And one day, I get a message from Forensics, whose Instagram handle is Hookem.
Deputy Hookem.
Deputy Bookem.
Deputy Bookem. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Eric. Yeah, I know him as Eric in Forensics. So he hit me up and was like, "Would you want to do a song together?" I'm like, "You know, who are you?" Like, and I said, "You know, why not?" He was doing music. He told me the concept, and it was Human. It was a really big song for him, and I said absolutely. And we did the song together, but doing the song with him, and he was doing a lot of work with Humanizing the Badge at the time.
Sure.
And you know, that was a good opportunity, and it really set the fire up under me, because I was like, well, people want this music. So from that point, I started recording the Blue Nation album that was released in 2018. And it's probably one of my, you know, best-selling albums to date. And I say, you know what, I'm gonna keep it going, because as things were going on, I would get messages, brother, from officers, mm-hmm. like, look, your music just taught me off the ledge. Like,
yeah.
I was being officer-involved shooting.
It's very powerful, man. Powerful music.
And, you know, I didn't get it. I didn't get it, you know, and until I started getting those messages, cause mm-hmm. I was like, man, look, I'm putting a lot of money that I'm not getting back, in a sense, into these projects. And I'm not doing it for money, right? Yeah. But I'm doing it because I want police officers to be motivated to stay in, because I'm touching on everything that you deal with, from family issues, to mental health issues, to drinking, mm-hmm. to suicide, everything that yeah. you can imagine that law enforcement officers deal with, I touch on. And but when I start getting those messages, you know,
it keeps me going.
And so after Blue Nation, I did the Baptizing Blue album, and then last Friday, I released the Never Know EP, which is doing really well.
Yeah, that's another one I was listening to.
Yeah, man. So, but that's kind of how I track through the music, man. I've been finding like a lot of good talent out of, you know, guys that are doing music, because I really think it's a place for law enforcement officers to be able to have something they can listen to.
Oh, absolutely. And like you said, man, it's, and all the chaos that we've been talking about, Ariel, that's going on in the world, it's nice that somebody like you is not, it's just not for Leos, it's for military and,
yep,
and patriots. I mean, it's not just for Leos, but it's a go-to place, you know, yeah. where people can say, look, there are people out there. Here's a fellow Leo who not only is serving, but he's making some kick-ass music that I can immerse yeah. myself in. Because, you know, as well as I do, I mean, it's like, we all feel like lone wolves out there sometimes. We're all in our little community. I'm talking about law enforcement.
Yeah.
And outside that community, it's like we don't think we have a lot of support. But I always tell people, we have more support out there in the community than I think people know. I wish people were more vocal about it.
Yeah.
But I do think the majority of people out there still support law enforcement.
They do. I do. Like you said, they're just not vocal about it.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of people out there in their pockets that are, you know, behind Blue Nation, as I say. But when you talk about the music, man, I just wanna motivate people and be able to find a platform to be able to get get it out to everybody, just because I know music can heal. And one of the big things, I set up a booth at the 2008 Police Week. And one of the most invigorating things about the whole experience was I would get more kids coming to me and they're, you know, wanting to take pictures. Outside of that, their parents will follow up and say, "We like this, man, because you don't have any cursing in your stuff. My kids can actually listen to this."
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people like hip hop, you know, a lot of people like rap music, but it has a negative, it gets a negative mark just because of the bad lyrics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do is make music that I know my kids can listen to without me cringing, and for other parents, they'll feel comfortable with their kids listening to it.
Yeah.
Last year was my first time performing at Police Week. That was Police Week. They were doing some test runs. I'm doing some live shows, and not this past year. We know this year was a wash, unfortunately, because of COVID. But last year, I was one of the first hip hop artists to record, well, not record, but to perform at National Police Week. Man, that was a great opportunity. Yeah, and
so what's next for you, brother? What's next for you, brother?
Book.
I was going to ask you, and you got a book in you, man. Man, you all American football player, law enforcement rapper, doing so great. You know, great things in the community. You got a book in you, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I think that's the next thing, and that's the reason I only did a EP this time, because I wanted, like I said again, you know, to fill in some of the backstory, and we talked about a little bit. I ended up having to drop out of college.
Yeah.
And I got my associate's degree at Colorado Technical University, and then I went to today is my last day. Today,
congratulations.
Day
congratulations.
Yeah, man. So I'm super excited, but I just need other officers to know, like, look, you can still make it through. Like, you just got to keep pushing, because there's a lot of guys that are in my same situation that are trying to get their education and trying to advance themselves. So I do want to write a book, man.
But well, I think we were talking, Ariel, before we started about, I'm with you, man. I think so much of it is mindset, you know, and the way you look at the world. I still think, as much craziness is going on, I still think I know we are going to come out of this stronger, more resilient, but it takes that mindset, you know, it takes that warrior attitude. And I know a lot of people don't like that word, but I'm going to use it anyway, because you have to have that warrior mindset. I'm not talking about going out there beating people up. I'm just saying within, you know, that mental fortitude that you're going to make it through anything.
Yeah. When we look at reform, all we need to do, man, if I could be king for a day, the one way I think we solve the issue is we have some level of continual vetting for officers. That's one thing I know we don't have, but we do have it. We do have it at my agency. But I have to take, you know, I have to take a polygraph every five years. I have we have psych evaluations done if needed, like if somebody reports something, but we have financial disclosures every year. We have a reinvestigation every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep people honest. And I think, I don't know what that looks like at the state, federal level or local level, but I think we just need to have some checks, some quality control checks to ensure that officers are staying true to themselves. Because as we know, there are a lot of issues that don't get addressed from, you know, in my opinion, that should be addressed at the federal level, like mental health issues within law enforcement. You telling me these guys go out here and deal with trauma for 20 years and they don't, it may not be a possibility to have some PTSD? You telling me that?
Yeah, no, you know, I agree.
You see what I'm saying? I think it's other things that, while we like to use law enforcement as a scapegoat for everything that's wrong in America, my question to you is, what are you doing for the law enforcement officers in America? Because again, we don't get peacetime in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Right? Every day is a possibility that you may not come back in that house every day. And I think our nation has failed law enforcement from the perspective of, look, you need education, experience, exposure. Well, education, we can have a reform bill that says, look, if you put, you know, 3 years in on the street, we'll pay, you know, 50% of your schooling costs. If you do, you know, 6 or 5 years on the street, we'll pay 100%, mm-hmm. right, of your schooling costs. We'll give you some benefits towards buying a home. You know, emulating a little bit of the military stuff, especially some, we can get to the finite details of a policy, but from a 30,000 foot perspective, I think we have failed law enforcement because we expect so much from law enforcement officers, yet we do so little for law enforcement. And here exactly. we have a dialogue about defunding the police. Now, you and I both, you know, we've worked at the command level. We know what a defunding looks like, right? Mm-hmm. On a budget that probably 80% of our budget is sitting on, you know, salaries, mm-hmm. you know, covering salaries, and then, you know, 15% is going to be taking care of the police academy and the stay there and some of the annual training. And, you know, and then you got, you know, another smaller percentage that's going to be, you know, keeping the lights on per se. Right. So we already got a minimal, the budget is already minimal. Right. And my numbers may be a little off, my percentages may be a little off, but we're already mm-hmm. working with a minimal budget. So I don't think defunding is going to work, because when you defund, you also in that same breath are going to say, well, we want you to train more.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, do more with less.
Yeah, do more. What the portion that you're going to take away from me is the portion I'm going to probably use for training.
Yeah, which is something we need the most.
It's something we need the most. So that's not going to work. But what I would challenge, and I wish I had a bigger, you know, voice to be able to scream at, you know, some of our nation's leader and say, look, we want more from law enforcement, but we're not giving them nothing. If you want the best, you give the best. You know, that's why we look out for our soldiers, sailors, Marines, et cetera. We look out for them because we know we're expecting a lot from America expects a lot from law enforcement, yet it's not doing anything for law enforcement. So it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I hope we can get to the point, brother, where we can have these conversations like you and I are having without getting into screaming matches. And yelling matches. I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know. I agree with you, man. I think it starts at the leadership level, from the community level to law enforcement at every level. We just need to have these conversations, because the bottom line is we both need each other. The community needs us. We need the community. And
absolutely, we
need to find some middle ground here. And I agree with you 100%. I think we need police reform. We need to change the way we do things. But defunding, I mean, you saw they just got rid of 600 cops, I think, in New York City Police Department, undercovers that are out there. Undercovers, they're an anti-crime unit that are undercover, that are doing a great job. They're gone. Well, I think I talked to a buddy that's in NYPD that they didn't fire these. They just kind of put them in different areas of the department. But now you don't have 600 cops out there in New York City of millions of people. Mm-hmm. Now everybody knows, okay, here come the uniforms. You know, we'll just stop the stuff we're doing and wait till they leave, and we'll go ahead and keep doing it. It's just, it's madness, man. It's just unbelievable the time we're in.
Watch what happens. My prediction is it will get worse than before it gets better.
Oh, I agree.
You're going to see our nation kind of, you know, you're going to start seeing those extra liberal people that, you know, they're going to start migrating to these areas that are defunding the police. And you're going to see, if you look at the United States from a, you know, from above, you're going to see, you know, red and blue states, very divine, right? You get what I'm saying? It's, blue is going to be super blue and red is going to be super red, because you're going to start seeing people migrate to these areas, and you're going to start seeing murder rates and crime rates shoot up in those.
Well, it's happening now. It's happening in New York City. It's happening in, I think, Atlanta. It's happening in, LA. So it's happening all over the place. I think New York City, and you probably know, New York City enjoyed one of the lowest crime rates, I think, wasn't too long ago, just a handful of years ago. And I think, like we've been talking, that's a testament to the leadership, or lack thereof, in these areas. So, Ariel Freeman, brother, any final thoughts before we wrap up? Thank you so much for your time. But any final thoughts for everybody out there?
Look, man, just stay motivated. It's going to be a rough time for you. You're going to think about quitting, giving up, especially those that have the uniform on, in both uniforms, military or law enforcement. But don't give up. Don't give in. Things will always get better. But they have to get worse sometimes. We're during a storm, and but this too shall pass. So just stay motivated.
Ariel Freeman, man. Such an amazing insight, brother. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you, man?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram at one time, the number one, T-I-M-E music, at one time music on Instagram.
Everything will be linked up in the show notes, folks. Ariel, again, brother, thank you for your time. Thank you for your service, man. Love to have you back on the show, brother.
Just let me know when, man. Peace and love.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.